Welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast. I'm Jerry Bain, and this EDUCAUSE 2009 conference podcast is sponsored by Juniper Networks and Quest Communications International. You can find more podcasts like this on a variety of topics by searching for EDUCAUSE on iTunes or by visiting www.educause.edu/podcasts. On this podcast, we feature a conversation with Ulrich Rauch, professor for the Learning Center at the University of Trinidad and Tobago, and Joseph Vaughn, CIO and Vice President for Computing at Harvey Mudd College. The topic is the challenges of cultural change. You guys are part of a group that is presenting a session titled Hailing from the Foreign, the Plight and Delight of Embodying Cultural Change. I'd like to start by asking, higher education institutions are notoriously resistant to cultural change. Could you talk a little bit about the challenges you've run into when arriving in a new position, in a new college, a new organization, or even a new location?
In my case, this is Joseph, I moved from UCLA to Harvey Mudd College, so from 37,000 students to 756 it is at the moment, and it's quite a dramatic change. I would agree that institutions are resistant to change, but lately I've been thinking about why that makes sense. For a faculty member, for instance, if you're doing interesting work in your own area, you want a stable environment around you. And so it makes some sense to be conservative in other areas. And I'm trying to develop a more sympathetic ear for that situation. The challenges in moving from a really big university to a really small one were, in my case, somewhat surprising. There were places where I didn't expect to miss UCLA, and I discovered that I did, in areas like financial reporting, of all things, or the fact that the big HR machine at UCLA was actually very, very helpful.
You know, I have to say that, of course, I'm still thrilled to have escaped the cold Canadian winters.
You were at British Columbia, right?
That's right. Yeah. To the, you know, the sunny kind of shores of the Caribbean. In terms of the kind of changes that I see being difficult to make is clearly coming in from an organization that was very well functioning. I'm moving in an organization that is, you know, fairly new and tries to play catch up. And because it is a different cultural environment, what I find out is I really had to learn about the culture first. So before coming in with any kind of concepts of how I was going to change everything, being the change agent invited to, you know, join the university, I really learned that. And learning doesn't happen in 3 weeks or in 3 months even. It took months to understand completely how the society works and then see how the university, as part of that society, a national university it is, how that is working. And, of course, it's mirrored. And so the challenges are really to understand why business processes are done in particular ways before I begin to make suggestions how to change things.
Right. Now, on a more macro level, is it the same for you? I mean, he's going from country to country, which is a huge cultural shift. Mm-hmm. But is there there's a learning curve that comes with even switching in within a country?
Yeah, in my case, it's 50 miles.
Right.
And, yeah, that's absolutely true. I would agree with Uli. I stumbled upon something that really helped me at the beginning. I said from early on that the CIO got to say they were new for 2 years, so I still have a couple of months left. Change was desired, but it gave me some space to do what Uli said, which was to try and understand the organization and try and understand the people. I have lived in Spain for a long time, so I know the experience of moving to a foreign country where I didn't speak the language. And in many ways, there are similar experiences. Things that you take for granted are just, I think alien is a good word for them. And so I had an example in my first few days where I shared my calendar with all of my staff. And in the few days afterwards, I noticed that people kept coming to me and saying, I know notice you're going to meet with so-and-so. You should know this before you talk to them, etc. So I knew they were looking at my calendar. And months later, one of my staff said to me, you know, Joseph, you shared your calendar in the first few days. That was revolutionary. And to me, it was just normal business. And so you have to kind of develop an ear for when you might actually be doing something that is a significant change for the people around you, and figure out ways to get them to tell you, because they might not want to. And so you really do have to study the culture.
You have to earn respect, and you have to earn legitimacy, and you have to become credible. You never know what may be the resistances that you may encounter. Like I'm a white guy coming into really a very different cultural context with a predominantly black population, or I should say, you know, well, it's half Indian. They were indentured labor after the abolition of slavery, and it's Africans basically. So, you know, you come in there and you really don't know to what extent will people accept you. And it's not a given, because if you really want to make changes and if you want to really be supported, then you have to get the respect. And again, I found that it comes in little doses and mm-hmm. in ways in which you may not realize, like you opening up your calendar, like I found myself talking to people. And that is very specific, again, maybe for the culture that I moved to, because there's very little transparency. And so people are not used to be talked to or being invited into a dialogue. And, you know, there was no transparency. So these are the little steps that you have to do, because you have to have some supporting network before you set on to make more structural changes.
So sort of an abstract question. What's that critical mass you reach where you learn enough about an organization that you know what to change and what not to change?
That's a fantastic question. My sense is you have to experiment. You have to be willing to make a mistake and recognize that, no, this such and such is held sacred, if you like, so that you don't mess with that. I think, like Uli, talking to people and getting a sense of understanding the history.
What I think, firstly, that happens is that you have to look for the low-hanging fruit, and that is really what's there already, what is doable. My sense is really, coming back now to this more personal assessment, what can be done. Yes, you have to be confident, but you have to be strategic about it, because if you are not getting backed up, and that is from the leadership, then you're not going to go anywhere. Because people, in particular, again, in the culture that I came in, a very kind of hierarchical environment, very much still determined by kind of colonial experience, you know, the power is all on the top. It's not distributed. So you will have to be strategic and get the buy-in from above. So very specifically, I focused on, you know, a learning management system, made sure that this is actually working, get some legitimacy that way, show little improvements, and show that, you know, I'm here, I'm actually doing something. And then I think you can start dealing with the larger problems. In our particular case, it was HR. You mentioned you had, Joseph, you had a great HR environment at UCLA. Mm-hmm. So did we at UBC. In Trinidad, HR is something that's just coming about. Now, I can take them on. I won't take them on. I want to work with them, but not right now. There is more important things to be done. And again, being strategic, lower hanging fruit.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys run into naysayers?
What you get is people that won't do what they promise you to do. I mean, the naysaying is not so much a verbal communication.
I try to avoid thinking of people as, you know, like supporters or naysayers, even though that is a reality too. But often there's a grain of truth in what someone is saying if they're resisting you. And I think it's important to listen and understand what that might be. An experience I had, and I'm sure people have it everywhere, where it's hard to get commitment beyond the room, where someone says, yes, I agree with you, but then the work continues in the old vein. And so you need to spend time thinking about what you're going to ask for agreements on. And I think really importantly, giving people the opportunity to make a counter-proposal and saying, no, I think we should do it this way, and then working out so that you have an agreement that people actually will that you and the person you're dealing with can stick to. And that's a cultural change that takes, I think, takes time, takes experience of it working, and so on.
To what extent is a new organizational culture an opportunity to measure and compare one's own standards? And what does it mean for yourself if you have to reverse or inverse your own practices and assumptions?
See, this is what I find for myself the most interesting and the kind of the richest experience, that really once my own assumptions of best practices need to be critically reflected, some of these practices, you can't implement them because the context is different than where you came from. And others, you just have to start understanding that the context is shaping practice. And so unless you understand the context, and I will give you the example of, for instance, that's extracurricular now. It has nothing to do with work. If people don't stop at the traffic light at night, it's not because they want to break the law, but it's because they're afraid to stop because they may get robbed. So they don't. And so everybody knows that. And so at night, you accommodate your actions, your driving, to the fact that people may just break lights. And in the workplace, it's just the same, that, and I mentioned that before, that, you know, my understanding of the role of HR as a supportive factor, for instance, in supporting me to build a new unit, that I find that HR has a very different understanding of itself. And that has to do with the fact that most people were, you know, not working in university before. They don't understand the partnership that exists between academics and what I would call the corporate staff. So then you have to accommodate your own expectations and your own actions to that. I think it's a very important process, and you will have to just let things be at times. You have to be patient, really. You have to be patient.
Yeah, you have to be patient, and you have to be impatient too. You don't want to put yourself in a situation where you're actually being loose on the goals and accountability. So you need to remind yourself of that, but you certainly need to pick the areas that you want to see progress in. I'm sitting here thinking that when you're talking about it in hindsight, it's easy to make it sound like you really knew what you were doing. And in many cases, you have to feel your way intuitively. Uli, can I ask you a question? What was your biggest surprise when you moved?
I can tell you the biggest surprise, probably in terms of a professional relationship, is, and I'm saying this in a very unflattering way, the realization that whatever you do in an organization, there's a German saying, it says the fish stinks from the head, that it is often enough that if you, and you know, I could be the head,
right,
if I'm not setting the right direction, so to speak, or I'm not using the right tools for communication, it is not happening. Mm-hmm. And so if I can use the phrase, you really have to lead from where you are. Mm-hmm. And leading from where you are means really to be very reflective of what you do with the people that you're working with. And again, in the particular context that I'm working in, a lot of people are new to the university environment. Lots of mm-hmm. support staff are new to the university environment. They don't understand what we have taken for granted mm-hmm. in North America, that there is an academic freedom in the sense of that if things need to be done to support research, learning, teaching, then they are being done because that is the purpose of the university. Whereas they are looking almost at business processes that are more important than people. So systems mm-hmm. are more important than people, and people serve systems as opposed to systems serving people. So again, the inversion there is really something that I realized was the realization of that it's inverted and that you cannot change it mm-hmm. just by being there and postulating another solution, but you have actually to work on it in a very methodical way. And again, low-hanging fruit with people that work around you, and hope that you know, it will basically a viral infection that that everybody understands over time. There is more joy in work if you know that you have a certain measure of control and autonomy over your job.
So how do you look at the need to assess and recognize whether or not you're jumping into the right situation for you personally and professionally? So it's sort of the inverse question of not how are you changing that environment, how is that environment changing you, and how do you decide if that's right? How did you go from UCLA to Harvey Mudd? What did that mean to you?
Well, I like to say that I was aiming for Ireland, which is where I was born, and I missed by about 10,000 miles. I had been interested for quite some time in what life was like in a small college, so I was deliberately looking in that arena. But the first part of your question is how do you know if it was right? And I don't think that there's a single measure. There's a level of fulfillment, a sense that you're making a difference. And I had all of these at UCLA too. So it's, I guess there's a sense in which every now and then you ask yourself, is this a job that I'm excited about doing, even when I'm, you know, suffering from lack of sleep? Am I coming in feeling that this is a meaningful task? That for me is the measure.
And UCB, all you guys end up in the warm climate. Cyprian just moved to Australia.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
Now you're in Tobago. So yeah. What was the motivator there besides weather?
You know, and it's not money and power either. I tell you that. You know, that would be the easy answer.
There's very few options.
Yeah. So no, what it is really, and you pointed to it, Joseph. I think it has to do with self-realization. What is it that you dream about? And I tell you, the context of, you know, the offer that I received to when coming down to Trinidad was that there was to be a national university built, and that university was to be focusing on educating teachers who then go out into primary and secondary schools and change the way instruction is being done. And that really, the fact that you could actually, by having a mandate to change basically the curriculum, the mode of delivery, the teaching learning process in the university, that will have reverberations for the nation as a whole. And I really, that was so attractive, seeing that you actually are part, you're becoming part of change. And that, of course, together with the climate and the sense that, you know, you only live once and you got to go and enjoy what, you know, while you can.
So adventure.
And it had to be an adventure. And so this is my personal take to, yeah, that's my adventure.
Thank you Good. Guys so much for joining
Thank
me today,
you.
Uli Rauch and Joseph Vaughn. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This EDUCAUSE 2009 conference podcast is sponsored by Juniper Networks and Quest Communications International.